Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Well, hey, I want you to imagine your life without fear. That doesn't help, okay? Well, imagine your life without fear. Like if I could take a fear magnet and just hover it over your heart and extract like every last shred of dread about what tomorrow may bring or what people might think or your fear of failure or fear of death or fear of not mattering. Like if I could just extract every last shred of fear from your life, like how would your day be different? Would you maybe breathe a little easier? Sleep a little harder? Would you be a better parent, a better spouse, a better neighbor? Would you just maybe be a better person? I mean, can you even imagine your life with no fear? Better yet, what if faith and not fear was your default reaction to every threat? Now, last week we kicked off this new series, Summer by the Lake, and we're just looking at different interactions Jesus had with people by a lake. And during this series, we're learning and are going to be learning about really what Jesus is all about, what he intends for a relationship to look like with you and with me. And ultimately, we're going to learn what it looks like to actually follow Jesus. And if you have your Bibles this morning, you pull them out and turn to the book of Mark, chapter 4. If you don't have a Bible, but you've got a smartphone, you can actually pull out our app and access the Bible through the Verve app. If you don't own a Bible, we have them for free at the Velcro Bar. Feel free to stop by there after the service and grab one. No strings attached. We'd love for you to own a readable translation of the Bible. Today, I want to talk about what it means to follow Jesus in the storms of life, the challenging times that you face where fear just kind of takes over in your life. And what I want to do today is I want to look at this story in Mark 4 where Jesus' disciples faced a literal storm and hopefully discover what God says to them, but also to you and to me about when we find ourselves in the midst of a storm. Because here's the thing, storms are going to come in your life. Okay, they are going to come, and how we respond to those storms, how you respond to those storms will shape your life and will shape your walk with Jesus. Now, before we read the story, let me just give you a little context here in Mark chapter 4. Jesus has just finished an extremely busy day. He has done a number of miracles. He has taught some of his most famous parables, and the whole time he has just had people crowding around him. And so he is just literally exhausted here at the end of the day. And we pick up in Mark chapter 4, we'll begin in verse 35. It says this: "That day when evening came, he said to his disciples, 'Let us go over to the other side of the lake.' Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up." This sounds like the kind of sound my kids used to make when they were little babies. You know, they could produce a furious squall. So this furious squall comes up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. George Clooney was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. I know, hey, that's a movie, sorry. This happened for real. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." And then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. Can you even imagine experiencing that, witnessing that? He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." Now, the Sea of Galilee is still notorious for ferocious unpredictable storm. So it's located 680 feet below sea level, and it's virtually surrounded by mountains. Now, I am not a meteorologist, even though I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express this past week. True story. But experts say that the topography of the Sea of Galilee is like perfect, and a perfect place for a violent storm to just kind of to blow up with little or no warning. And so when you read this story, don't think like rain and wind and thunderclouds. Think like hurricane, cyclone, typhoon. Okay, I mean, this is a major deal. In fact, it is quite normal, quite typical for waves during a violent storm like this to reach a height of 20 feet on the Sea of Galilee. And so this was like the perfect storm, so to speak. And even though some of Jesus' followers, some of the guys in the boat here, even though they were experienced sailors, I mean, they had been through storms on the Sea of Galilee before, but this storm in particular was more than their skills could handle. And I find that that's the kind of storms that typically come into your life and my life, more than your skills can typically handle. Let me ask you this morning, what storms are you facing today? More figurative than literal. Maybe a situation at work. Maybe a relationship that's gone south. An addiction. Bankruptcy. You know, it's what's interesting is as you go through life, sometimes life can just be really good. And just be really normal. And then unexpectedly, out of nowhere, some storm just comes blowing into your life. You know, your accountant says you owe more than what I originally thought you were going to owe this year. Your boss says, I need to see you in my office right away. Your teenage daughter says, I bought an early pregnancy test yesterday and we need to talk. Your spouse says, I think we need to see a counselor. Your doctor says, the results came back, and I want you to get over here to my office as quickly as possible. And just in just a moment's notice, unexpectedly, calm becomes chaos in your life. And how you react and how I react to these unpredictable disturbances that come up can make or break you. And they can make or break your walk with Jesus. And this dramatic incident on the Sea of Galilee, I want to just take a look at this, a little deeper look at this today, because I think it teaches you and me some basic principles about God's protection in life storms. And I think it can give you the strength that you need to help you through the storms. Now, one of those principles is this. Every person experiences storms, even those who travel with Jesus. Okay? Every person experiences storms, even those who travel with Jesus. Notice that having Jesus in their boat did not exempt the disciples from being battered by the storm. Now, the reality is storms come into our lives from a lot of different sources. Okay? The reality is I often find myself in less than desirable circumstances because I made a dumb decision or did something really dumb. Sometimes I face a storm because of some sin in my life, or maybe the sin of somebody else in my life. Storms come from a lot of different sources, but can I give you a heads up? And this, you may not be ready to hear this, okay? But following Jesus, doing what he says, can take you into a storm. Following Jesus can put you in a storm. See, the disciples here on the boat, they weren't being punished because of some disobedience. They were just doing what Jesus had asked them to do. Remember, this was his idea. Jesus said, let's go to the other side of the lake. Okay, this was his idea. They're doing exactly what he's asked them to do. They're just following him. And now they find themselves in the midst of a storm. And the reality is your obedience to Jesus can sometimes put you in a storm. Maybe you already realize this. Maybe you've started following Jesus and faith is new to you. And perhaps your family doesn't like the fact that you're now living for God. And the storm clouds have just started gathering in your family because of that. Maybe your employer may not be too comfortable with your new dedication to integrity at the office. Okay? The reality is following Jesus, being obedient to Jesus, can put you in a storm. And I think that's such an important lesson for you and for me to hear, because I'm afraid that many, and maybe even you, somewhere along the way have gotten the impression that following Jesus and walking with Jesus, life will always be smooth and easy. And that's just not true. In fact, the Bible makes it very clear that being a companion of Jesus does not provide us immunity against hardship and against storms in our life. Following Jesus doesn't mean that you won't have troubles and problems. And in fact, it was Jesus himself who said this about God in the book of Matthew, chapter 5. We'll put it on the screen. He said, "He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." Okay? Storms come to all of us. He also said, Jesus said in John chapter 16, he warned, "In this world, you will have trouble. Okay? But take heart. I have overcome the world." You see, God never promised that just because Jesus is on the boat that the storm will not hit you, okay? That the storm will never rock you. What he promises is that the storm will never sink you as long as you hold on to him. Okay? And so every person experiences storms, even those who travel with Jesus. But here's another lesson in this story. And Jesus is with us in the storms, even though it may appear that he's unconcerned. Jesus is with you in the storms, even though at times he may appear to be unconcerned. The disciples are battling for their lives here, and the boat is sinking. And where's Jesus in this? Verse 38, Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. Now that's quite a picture, isn't it? This fierce storm, and there's Jesus snoozing, all right? I mean, the thunder here is roaring and Jesus is snoring, all right? The disciples are screaming while Jesus is dreaming, all right? I mean, this is you like that? Yeah, thanks, yeah. Worked really hard on that. I'll do that again next service, seemed to go over well. But you know, I mean, just what a different picture that you have here. And I don't know if Jesus was just a super deep sleeper. Any of you like just sleep really, before we had kids, I would sleep through the fiercest storms. One night, the next morning, Lisa said, "I really can't believe you can sleep through the kind of storms that shake the house and the thunder and lightning that lights up the house." That night, she was so concerned about me because I wasn't awake from the storm. She actually put her hand over my mouth to see if I was breathing. And I don't know, that went away after we had kids, but I don't know if Jesus was just a super deep sleeper or what, but you can kind of understand the disciples' response here, right? I mean, they go to him and say, they woke him up, it says, and they said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" You've been there, haven't you? I mean, the storm has come in your life. Everything is going wrong. You're seeking. And Jesus is asleep or absent, or at best, he's unaware. And I mean, you wonder, God, man, if you love me, why are you letting me go through the storm? I mean, don't you care? See, fear causes us to question the presence of God, but it does more than that. It causes us to question the character of God. It causes us to wonder if God is really good, right? If God even cares. Now, as the story continues, it becomes obvious that Jesus cared, But let me suggest this. Jesus wasn't asleep because of a lack of concern. He was asleep because of a lack of request. He wasn't asleep because of a lack of concern. He was asleep because of a lack of request. You have to understand that a lot of the guys who were on the boat with Jesus, they had lived their whole lives on the lake. Okay, they were expert sailors. They had weathered storms in the past all on their own. And here's what the story doesn't tell us. It doesn't tell us how long the storm had been going on before they woke up Jesus. Okay? But here's what I'm guessing. I'm guessing that these guys relied on their human skills as long as possible before they woke up Jesus. Okay, see, I'm guessing they bailed water. They set the rudder right into the waves. They did everything that they humanly could possibly do. And it wasn't until their own efforts proved useless that they cried out to Jesus. In fact, my guess is Jesus would have calmed the storm even earlier if they had asked, but they waited until the situation was desperate before crying out. Now, the reason I think this, and I realize that Mark doesn't tell us this, but the reason I think this is because that's what I'm like. Okay? That's the way I kind of live life. When storms hit in my life, I tend to do what comes naturally. I try to take care of it myself, try to fix it myself, do it myself, just weather it on my own. Why? Because I don't like to ask for help. Anybody with me on that? Okay. The rest of you are lying. That's okay. It's just, you're just in church. It's all right. Yeah. All right. Yeah, listen, here's why I know that you're like me. There's a reason Barnes & Noble Bookstore has a complete section devoted to self-help. Because we don't like to ask for help. We want to learn how we can fix it ourselves, okay? But when it comes to really big storms that come into our lives, self-help just doesn't cut it, okay? Now, you can speak for yourself, but when it comes to myself, self is unreliable, okay? Self is undependable, self is incapable, self can't get it done. Let me tell you what self can do. Self can try harder. Self can work more. Self can have another drink. Self can go shopping to escape the pain. But self can't help. In fact, if self-help could really help, Jesus would have just given you a gift card to Barnes & Noble and said, you know what, go buy a book, buy a latte, have a nice life, right? But the reality is, the truth is, and what these first followers learned on the boat is that when the storms come, I've got to have somewhere that I can place my hope and my trust and my confidence other than myself. After Hurricane Hugo ravaged the South Carolina coast years ago, there was a story that kind of went around about a group of Christians that had gathered in their frame church in the midst of the storm. And in the midst of the storm, an old eloquent preacher just started praying among the people. And he just said, "Most omnipotent, gracious God, send us the spirit of the children of Moses. Send us the spirit of the children of Israel. Send us the spirit of the children of the promised land." And just about then, the wind howled a little bit louder. And this old elderly preacher was interrupted by another old man who was a little more direct. And he prayed, "Lord, don't send no one. Come yourself. This ain't no time for children." That's a great prayer, isn't it? This ain't no time for children, right? You know, here's the reality. Prayer doesn't have to be a desperate SOS. I mean, it can be, but it doesn't have to be. And the reality is, you can call it Jesus at the first sign of a disturbance. God doesn't promise you exemption from trouble, but he does promise you his presence, and he does promise you his protection through it. I pulled out a few scriptures this week that I just want to share with you that assure us of these promises that God gives us in the midst of storms, and maybe they'll encourage you today in whatever storm you're facing. The Bible says in Psalm 23, verse 4, "Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil." Why? "For you are with me." Okay. Now, I don't know what storm you may be facing, but he's with you. Okay, he's present. He's with you even in the storm. Isaiah 43, verse 2, I love this, especially with the story we're reading. It says, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you." It's a promise. Psalm 46 says, "God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in trouble, and therefore we will not fear." Hebrews 13:5, "Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you." It's a promise. It's a promise that you can hold on to. See, let me say this. don't let the presence of a storm cause you to doubt the presence of God. Don't let the presence of a storm in your life cause you to doubt the presence of God. You are not alone in the middle of the storm. He is with you. Jesus accompanies you through it. You just need to call on Him and trust Him. You need to choose faith over fear. Now, the story continues, and they've woken Jesus up. They said, "Hey, don't you care if we drown?" And look at Jesus' response in verse 39. He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. Verse 40, he said to the disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" Now, you need to understand here, and the reason is because when I read that, I kind of hear a bit of hurt and disappointment in Jesus' voice. And I think what we have to understand is that these guys are in the boat, and they had already experienced so much with Jesus. I mean, they had watched Him turn water into wine. They had watched Him heal diseases, cast demons out of people. And it's kind of like Jesus here on the boat is going, "Hey, guys, man, like, even after all of that, do you still not have faith? I mean, after all that you've experienced, after all you've seen, is this really a surprise to you? Did you really think you were in some kind of danger?" You see, to Jesus, the problem wasn't the storm around them. It was the unbelief inside of them. And when Jesus says, "Do you still have no faith?" it could actually be translated, "Where is your faith?" And by asking it in that way, Jesus is saying to these guys on the boat, and He's saying to you, and He's saying to me, that the critical factor in your faith is not its strength, but its object. See, the critical factor in your faith is not like, do I have a lot of faith or a little bit of faith? Can I get more faith? That's not the critical factor. The critical factor is the object of your faith. Now, let's just imagine that you are falling off a cliff, okay? It's a great thing to imagine. Just imagine you're falling off a cliff. And let's imagine that there is a, sticking out of the cliff is a branch that is strong enough to hold you, okay? You don't know you don't know how strong it is, but it's strong enough to hold you. And as you fall, you have just enough time to grab the branch. Now, here's the question for you. How much faith do you have in the branch for it to save you? I mean, like, must you be totally certain that branch can save you before you grab a hold of it? No, right? Absolutely not. I mean, you only have to have enough faith, really, to reach out and grab it, right? I mean, that's all the faith that you've got to have. That's because it's not the quality of your faith that saves you. It's the object of your faith. The reality is it doesn't really matter a whole lot how you feel about the branch. It's the branch that matters. And for you and for me in our life, Jesus is the branch. He's the object of our faith. And the problem with fear, I know in my life, and maybe for you, is that whispers to me that the branch can't save me. Fear whispers to me that God's really not big enough to take care of me. That I'm not really safe in His hands. And as a result, it causes me to distort the way I think about Him. And as a result, I and maybe you have difficulty trusting Him to take care of and to handle your job or your money or your schedule, your marriage, your kids, and your storm. And Jesus looks at the disciples and He looks at you and me and He says, do you still not have any faith? Why are you so afraid? And what Jesus is doing here is He's inviting you to replace your fear with faith. He's inviting you to take your eyes off the storm and to place them on Him. He's inviting you to just have enough faith to reach for the branch. I think he's inviting you to remember how he's walked with you previous to this storm and how he's brought you through other storms, to remember that he'll bring you through this as well. Now, the story ends in a very interesting way in verse 41. It says, "They were terrified and asked each other, 'Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him.'" This is great. They are more terrified in the calm than they were in the storm. Okay, they were scared in the storm. Now they're scared out of their minds. Why is that? I think it's because they realize that Jesus is as unmanageable as the storm itself. Okay. These guys, in a moment's notice, they realized that they were in the presence of someone far more than just a great teacher and great healer. They were in the presence of God himself. They weren't marveling that the storm had stopped. They were marveling at the one who had stopped the storm. And the reality is, the storm had immense power, and they couldn't control that. Jesus has even more power, and they can even control him even less. But there's a huge difference between the storm and Jesus. The storm doesn't love you. You see, the reality is, nature is going to wear you down. Nature is going to destroy you ultimately. If you live a long time, eventually your body's going to give out and you're going to die. At least that's what statistics currently say. They say one out of one people die. And I don't think that's changing anytime soon, okay? And so eventually, you know, nature's going to have its best. And maybe it'll happen sooner. Maybe it'll happen through an earthquake or a fire at the Cosmopolitan or, you know, who knows, maybe some other kind of disaster. Nature's violent and overwhelming. It's unmanageable, and it's going to get you, and it's going to get me sooner or later. Now you may hear that. You may say, well, that's true, but if I go to Jesus, he's not under my control either. He's unmanageable too. He lets things happen that I don't understand. He doesn't do things according to my plan or in a way that makes sense to me. In fact, the reality is, I mean, if God's so powerful and so loving, why do I go through these storms? Right? Here's the thing. If Jesus is God, then he's got to be great enough to have some reasons to let you go through things that you don't understand. The reality is, you don't want a God you can manage. It's not much of a God. But if God is, if Jesus truly is God, then he's got enough power and strength to have some reasons to let you go through things that you don't understand. The reality is, his power is unlimited, but so is his wisdom and his love. And this leads us to one last lesson out of this story. Maturity comes by enduring the storms, even though I would prefer an exemption. Maturity or faith comes by enduring the storms, even though I would prefer to not go through them. You see, the storm, when a storm comes into your life, when some type of suffering comes into your life, it's not a sign that God has let you down, but rather it's an opportunity for God to build you up. So you have to understand this about God. God is primarily in the character-forming business, not the circumstance-shaping business. Does that make sense? See, God's primary concern is the person you become, not the circumstances that you inhabit. Okay? And the truth is, the reality is that every person faces storms. Every person experiences storms, but not only that, we all need them. We all need them, that they have a purpose in our lives. You see, when you go through storms, God promises you three things. He promises his presence. He promises his protection. But he also promises his purpose, that he will carry out his purpose through it. And the reality is, storms are one of the most effective ways for God to draw us closer to him. It's one of the most effective ways God has of helping you become the kind of person that I think deep down you really want to be. author Bob Benson suggests that you can't always properly label your experiences. And he tells about one of his friends who had a very serious heart attack, and for a while it looked like he wasn't going to make it through and live. But he got better, and he finally got strong enough that he was able to have heart surgery and could give him a new lease on life. And months later, after he was doing a lot better, when the two of them were talking about his experience, Bob Benson asked him, WT, how did you like your heart attack? And he said, scared me to death, almost. And Benson said, well, would you like to do it again? No. Would you recommend it? Definitely not. And then he asked him, says, does your life mean more to you now than it did before? Well, yeah. You know, you and your wife have always had a great relationship, but are you closer than you've ever been before? Yes. Do you have a new compassion for people, a deeper understanding and sympathy for others around you? Yes. Do you know Jesus in a richer and deeper way than you ever thought possible? Yes. How did you like your heart attack? And silence was his response. James, who was a half-brother of Jesus, he wrote this. He said, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. Why? Because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. You don't always get to choose what happens to you. Often you have no control over what someone does to you. A boss, a spouse, a child, a distracted motorist, a dishonest business partner. But you do have control over your reaction. And what if faith and not fear was your default reaction to every threat? What if you place your faith in the one who has the power and the love to bring you through whatever you face? What if every storm you face, rather than it being an obstacle, you looked at it as an opportunity to grow, an opportunity to learn trust and dependence on God, an opportunity to become mature and complete, not lacking anything. See, I don't know what storms you may be facing. I don't know what storms may be heading your way in the future. What I do know is that Jesus didn't bring you this far to leave you. When Jesus says that we're going to the other side, you're going to make it to the other side. You just have to hold on. He will pull you through whatever you face. And while God doesn't promise exemption from storms, he does promise his presence, his protection, and his purpose. So can I challenge you today to choose faith over fear? Faith in the one who says, when you pass through the waters, I will be with you. And when you pass through the rivers, they will not sweep over you. I'm going to give you some time right now just to think about what you've heard. Maybe to just talk to God about the storm you're facing right now. Maybe you've been trying to just kind of get through it on your own power, and it's time to cry out to him, to lean on him. And maybe you're here and you don't have a lot of faith. You're not even sure about faith and about Jesus. But maybe you have enough just to reach out for the branch. And if you do, that'll be enough. Because your faith, it's not about the quantity of it. It's about the object of it. So we're just going to give you some time right now to think about what you've heard and what that means for you. And during this time, we celebrate communion each week. And we remember through communion a personal storm that Jesus went through. You see, Jesus actually knew pain. Jesus knew struggles. He was a man of sorrows, familiar with storms. And communion is a piece of bread that represents his body, a cup of juice that represents his blood that he shed on the cross for you and me. It's a storm that he went through. It's a storm that he asked God to, if there was any way he could avoid it, he could be exempt from it. But it's also a storm that we take great joy in, because it's a storm that had a purpose that could not be fulfilled any other way. It was a storm that had to take place for Jesus to die on the cross so that you and I could have our sins forgiven, so you and I could have a new start, so that you and I could have a relationship with a God who could calm the wind and the waves. And so we invite you to take communion. It's on the tables with the candles on them around the room. You can make your way there during this time. Our band's going to play another song. And I just encourage you to take this time to lean into and to depend on Jesus, the only one who can get you through whatever you're facing. Let's pray. God, I don't know what each one in this room may be facing today, what storm may be in their life, but God, I know we all face them. And God, I'm sorry for so many times in the midst of a storm, just trying to do it on my own, trying to help myself to get through it. When you're there, present, ready to help in a moment's notice. God, I pray for each one in this room that today, if they have ever questioned your presence, that today they will remind that you are always there. And that God, if we simply would call out for you, if we have just enough faith, doesn't have to be much, just enough to reach out for you, that you'll be there for us to walk through the storm with us and to protect us, to bring us out on the other side. And God, even storms that come about because of our own sin or just living in this fallen world, God, you've promised that you've got a purpose you can carry out even through those. And Lord, today I pray that you would calm the storms in the lives of each person in this room. But most of all, I pray, God, you'd carry out your purpose in the storm, that you would help us to become better people, that we would see you more clearly, that we would trust you more, that little by little faith would start to replace fear in our life. God, thanks for being a God we can trust. God, thanks for being a God who loves us so much. You sent your Son into this world to die for us. God, may we trust in you, even in the midst of the storm. In Jesus' name, amen.